Hi, and welcome back to Developer's Guide.
Well, thank you.
Windows 10 Insider Preview. I'm with Jerry.
And I am with Andy, who ruined my last shirt. I had to go change shirts. No, thank you for that. We're here to talk about yet another feature that we can put into your application to make it even a better experience for the user. This time, navigation.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, there's a couple of things we need to think about navigation, both about navigating within an app. So we've got a frame and you're navigating from one page to another, navigation forwards and navigating back again. So that's one thing. And then the other thing is thinking actually about the size of a window where it's running, because the whole thing with Windows 10, the way that apps can run is a bit different.
That's right. And since we can build an application now that's windowed, we don't need to just constrain or control the width. We also want to think about the height. And so we want to talk about the different layouts your application can have. So as a WPF developer, we had a lot of options. Now we have most of those options coming to us as Windows developers too, as Windows app developers. And so the first is the ability to resize. So not just changing the size, the width like we did in Windows 8, but really the height as well. So we introduced this new Try Resize View, where we can pass in the new size of your application and it'll change its overall size.
Now, I guess on a phone, where we're still always going to be running full screen, that's not going to have any effect. It will just, that's why it's called a try method.
That's right. Yeah. And so it'll return a Boolean whether or not it could actually do it or not. And sometimes it can't. So there's two things that would prevent you from being able to resize your application. The first would be you're on a type of device that doesn't allow it, like a mobile device. The other one would be that you have a minimum size and you're trying to go below the minimum size of your application. So that's the next API we introduced, not just resizing, but the ability to set the minimum size. So in this case, it's the set the preferred minimum size. And just like try resize, set preferred is sort of special case because of device families. Sometimes it just doesn't support whatever you put in.
Oh, that's right. I said 320, I think, is the minimum size on mobile. So, yeah.
As far as width.
Width. Sorry, yeah. So size is two dimensions, of course. Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So talking about the width, that was something we used to put into the manifest in the actual minimum window size. Was something used to put into the manifest in 8.1 apps. Now, that element has been deprecated now. Mm. So, well, you deprecated? It's not allowed. You can't have it in the UWP.
Super deprecated.
Super deprecated. It's been... No, never mind. We'll not go there.
Right.
It's mean you can't use it. So in the manifest of a UWP app, if you're porting an app up from 8.1 and you had a minimum window size specified in that, you just need to remove that element. Mm-hmm. And instead use this API, set preferred min size, in order to ask the system to enforce that minimum.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. And you get really small. I've been playing with this API and I've got my application down to 100 by 100. Hmm. Makes it very usable.
That's an interesting
case. You pan that tiny grid over and over and over. There's an enum that returns when this happens. It's not just a true or false. It's whether or not it's allowed to help you kind of manage it as well. And so, it happens immediately. And so just like when the experience that you had as a WPF developer resizing your window, basically that's the capability that you have now with the caveat of it pays attention to the device family that you're on and doesn't mess up the user's expected experience. A couple of other things to consider is, so you were talking about the mobile SKU or the mobile device family.
Yeah.
And so that's really the immersive mode that shows up actually several places. It shows up on phone or on small tablets where mobile is running. But of course, it even would show up on the desktop where the touch version of the Continuum is running.
So if you like, you've got a Surface Pro and with one of these convertibles that can operate both as a PC or as a tablet. You know, when you remove the keyboard away from one of these devices, Windows 10 will pop up a little dialogue and say, do you want to switch to touch mode?
Right.
And then you're into a traditional tablet mode, if you like. And then we're back into, the appropriate user experience for a tablet, where your apps are either full screen or kind of docked to one side. You can have a couple side by side.
So yeah, kind of almost a Windows 8 experience, to be honest. You know, how everything is much more touch-oriented.
Yeah, right.
The other thing that might occur is the ability to go full screen. So think about kiosk mode and things like that that you might want for your application. That's fully supported, and you can ask for your application to go into kiosk mode. Just like resizing your application, it's a try, so you get back the result of whether or not it was allowed to go into it. And you can also ask or query to see if you're currently in full screen mode as well. So not kiosk mode, but full screen. That's what I meant to say. So that's another piece that might actually constrain you or keep you from resizing your application. But as soon as you're not in full screen mode, obviously you'll be able to resize it if you're in the mouse version of Continuum. We're not going to call it version, probably. Mouse mode of Continuum.
Yep. Yeah.
I think it's called the interactive mode as far as the enum that returns back from the Continuum API.
Right.
Okay, we also had the ability in Windows 8, and now this is enhanced in Windows 10, to create a brand new view. And so most developers called this creating a new window, where you could launch a portion of your application in a secondary window, or really a third or fourth window. It really wasn't a significant limit. It's easy to use this wrong, where you make it so that your user's experience is just a mess. But at the same time, it could be really valuable. You know, if you think about a point of sale scenario, I might have my application at my cash register and everything is the way you would want, but I would also have a secondary window that shows the receipt and maybe some customer facing information for the monitor that faces outward.
In fact, this makes me think of, and what you're talking about here is APIs you can use within an app to actually surface a whole new window. But that's actually the experience you get in app-to-app communication, isn't it? Where you do a launch URI on the desktop. So if you know, the whole app-to-app thing where you do using a protocol activation to launch another app and pass it information. And we had another session on that where you got two flavors of that. You can just do a one-way launch and transfer control to a whole new app. Or you can do the launch for results where you go off. And we showed a demo in that session of a kind of a shopping sort of scenario where one app allows a user to select some goods and then you switch over to another app which handles the payment process. And then when that is done, it switches back. And those are surfaced, that the user experience for that on a desktop is two separate windows where one is modal to the other once it's launched.
That's
on
right.
Phone, it'll just be still, you know, the full immersive experience is still full screen, but the flow for the user is still exactly the same.
The first time we saw this was with Internet Explorer. Remember, that was the one that introduced it first, and you could launch a second browser into another window.
Yeah.
All right, so it's one of the greatest things that you're going to receive as far as benefits in Windows 10 is the fact that we, Microsoft, are using the exact same framework and technologies that you're going to be using. So whenever there are glitches or hitches or whatever, we usually hit them first and make them a lot better. And here's a great example. The Photos application is a full Windows app, of course. And one of the features of a Photos app you would want is to be able to browse through your collection. The other thing that you want a Photos app to do is be able to preview a single picture. In fact, you want that application to preview a single photo without going through your collection. I just see it in my file system, double click, and it pulls up. Well, there just happened to be a behavior inside Windows applications that whenever I was trying to get to a secondary window or that secondary view that would show just a single photo, it would first show the primary application and then show the secondary window. And it was really an annoying experience for a photo viewer. Whenever you would double click it, it would show your collection for just a couple of milliseconds and then jump over to to the photo that you actually wanted to see. Well, of course, the team didn't like that either, and so we go in and start tweaking it and introduce new APIs. This is one of them. The application view switcher we introduced disables showing main view on activation. It may seem trivial, but it actually is just one of those things that makes your user experience that much more delightful.
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 This is what we're in, delighting our users.
It is. So we can control the layout, the minimum, and the actual size, whether or not it's full screen of your application. Now let's talk just about navigation, being able to move from one view to another view. There's a lot of
There's a lot of overloading of these terms. So
it really is.
Views mean, in the APIs we were just talking about, views mean, in the developer's mind, this means a whole new window.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas now we're talking about views at a sort of in-app level where we're talking about XAML pages, essentially.
Yep, that's right.
Yep.
View does have a lot, doesn't it? A Vista view, Windows Vista, Windows View.
Viewfinder.
Viewfinder. Oh, yeah. That's right. James Bond, View to a Kill.
Yep.
Back to that again.
On and on.
So navigation inside Windows 10 is a frame with pages inside of it. Let's talk about the navigation inside that frame and what the API looks like to you, the developer. Basically, we're talking about the navigate method. So if you have done any Windows development, you certainly know this by now, because this, even the Blink project has this in it. And the way that you do it is you don't navigate to a URI, which is the way we navigated in Silverlight. Mm-hmm. Well, the way you navigate is you navigate to a type.
Yeah.
Which is unusual, and a couple of things are the result of that. Navigating to a type also means you don't navigate to an instance. What that means then is, as I navigate, it is creating a new instance because I only get provided the type. To overcome some of the limitations around not being able to navigate to an instance, there is a page navigation cache that allows it to either reinstantiate or actually use the one that was already there. Yeah. So that developers kind of have that flexibility.
And this differs from Silverlight. If you're a Silverlight application developer, you would get a whole new instance of that page object every time, you know, if you had a navigation flow. So this is a bit different. Yeah.
And then as you navigate, you also want to pass in some sort of parameter, sort of like the query string you might pass to a web page. This, obviously, there's no URI, so you can't pass a query string. What you can pass, though, is an object or some sort of parameter. And even though the type is object, definitely the recommended thing to pass is a string, and that'll come to bear later when you start thinking about serializing your navigation state whenever you suspend your application. Using a string, that's always been the recommended practice all the way back to Windows 8.0.
But in fact, you can pass an object, but the kind of implication of that is that that object must be serializable. Mm-hmm. If we say, what do we mean by serializable? It means it can be turned into a string, whether that's XML or JSON or something.
That's what it means. With that voice. You want to use that voice. iSerializable. All right, so one of the things we've been talking about is the introduction of this new project template called Template 10. And this is sort of an advanced Blink. it includes some of the files and some of the capabilities that just aren't in the base template and the things that most developers build on their own anyway. And so some of those are there, including a navigation service. And part of Template 10's navigation service is the ability to pass this parameter, not just to the page like it's already built in, but to also pass it to the view model that's associated to the page if you're implementing an MVVM solution, which I would say a majority of you as YAML developers are probably doing. All right, so this is the way that you would interact with the API.
So,
right?
Jerry, what you're passing there at the bottom is, so you're using the navigation service in Template 10.
That's right.
Which is great, just kind of abstracts away this navigation into a nice self-contained navigation service, which is easy to use from view models, which is really cool. And then we're navigating to a particular type of a page. So this is a new page we're navigating to, which is the page 2 type in the views folder, and then we're passing a string, which is curious. What is a parameter? Is this a strange kind of parameter?
My parameter value? A marameter is used to measure the sea.
Okay.
Some people type things incorrectly by mistake, Andy. We're not all
British.
Not
all perfect like me. You want to try being perfect like me? It's
exhausting.
It is. No, that's a beautiful parameter to pass. That's just lovely. My parameter value.
My parameter value passes right in. Notice it's a string, fully serializable. Oh my goodness. Hey, I just highlighted. There we go. All right. Now it's about receiving that parameter in your page or in your view model. Every single page, with or without template 10, has an onNavigated to method that you can override and receive things that are coming in. It's the thing that fires basically to announce to the page that you can start processing, fetching your data, setting up your UI, whatever it is that you want to do.
And this is how you would transfer some context from one page to another. So think of a master detail. The classical case there is you've got a master page where you've got a list of items. The user has selected one particular item, and then you're going to navigate to the detail page where you can see all the details. You need to tell that detail page which item the user selected. So you might pass the GUID, the ID of a data record, or some. It's up to you, isn't it? Whatever you pass, but the state information that you're transferring from one page to another comes through on this parameter.
Yeah, you're right. And so if you're using the standard templates, then obviously you can use this override in the page. But if you're implementing an MVVM solution, then using templates in will also raise an equivalent on navigated to inside your view model, passing the parameter and all of the state information that Andy was talking about as well. So that's the benefit. And it kind of looks like this. On navigated to passes in a parameter. The signature is nearly identical. This is the signature for the view model. And the only difference is I'm passing in a string parameter. This sort of forces that convention of making sure that we're passing parameters of strings that you can serialize. But nonetheless, this is it. You get the parameter here. You just use it, however that is. But you also get the mode, so you can determine if this is a page forward or back or a brand new page is being instantiated. And then that dictionary object is the state that you can read from just in case you happen to have been suspended. Of course, we used that in the demo that we showed during lifecycle.
What sort of values do you have? Navigation mode, you have a navigation mode of new, isn't it? Is the first time on a, you know, the app's just been launched and you're navigating into a page for the first time.
Forward and back.
And then you have forward and back navigation. So you can find
refresh.
Out. And refresh is an interesting one. So that's something to do with...
There's no refresh. You can't say frame.refresh. So I'm not... That must be a future feature.
Or it could be a deprecated one. We need to figure out what that is. It sounds like a subject for a blog post. Or
it
maybe
does.
Somebody out there can tell us.
I have written... refresh implementations for a frame so many times. It's just one of those missing pieces that every developer writes.
Well, yes.
That's why we put it in template 10, by the way. You can refresh a frame.
Right.
All right, perfect. Now, let's talk about the parameters as far as a demo. If I show it to you, I think it might make the most sense. And I will, let's see, we'll do it obviously with template 10, right? Because we want to build this as a MVVM solution. So we'll just start with a blank project. I'll start with, we'll create a second page, right? So we can kind of see how we can pass to the second page. And because we'll do it as MVVM, I'll create a page to view model. And the only thing to make these view models work is to inherit from view model base. And so once I've inherited from view model base, I now have these overrides, and I can, including on navigated to. So this is my, I use prop note is a snippet that I've written, right? It's just a property. And so here is the default value from the constructor. So I'm setting what this parameter is, but just so I can see it in design time. Now I'll override on navigated to. This on navigated to, everything is set up for me. All I need to do is take that parameter and set it in my property called my parameter. I can use question mark dot just in case it's null, and I will obviously make it string, and then I'll use a double question mark here. If it happens to be null, I'll put the word empty in. It's not going to be null because we're going to make this demo work just right. Okay, so this is the UI of my of page two. Really here, all I need to do is add a reference to my view model and then just kind of show that parameter so we can see that it got passed in just right. So here's a namespace so I can reference my view models. And then I'll set my data context to be my VM and then page two view model. That's all there is to it to set up for data binding. I'll switch it over to be a hub so it has a header control or a header already set up and just do quick binding to my parameter. All right, so that's page two, just showing whatever that value is. This is page one, and so page one has a couple of properties, or a couple of fields here, each bound to the same property in the view model. All I really need is a button to sort of cause that navigation to occur. So I'll just set up a simple button, set its content to go to page two, and give it a click event to go to two, why not, right? I'll go ahead and create that handler so I can proceed with the navigation. In this case, I'm not going to use a commanding in view model. This is just a click event in code behind. Absolutely nothing wrong with that. The purpose of MVVM is not to get rid of code behind. It's to put code where it belongs. All right, so I'm going to make a quick reference to our app. That's where the navigation service is sitting here. And remember, we navigate to a type. This is going to be type page two. And what am I going to pass in? Well, in this case, what I'm going to pass in is whatever value I was typing, which, of course, is bound to my view model. So I can just say view model dot value. So that's the name of my parameter is value. Now that I have those two, it's going to pass in whatever my string was. And I'll go ahead and build, see if everything is correct. And I'll set this breakpoint so we can kind of watch it happen, just in case it happens too quickly. I'll run it here on local machine, so it's just in the desktop here. It'll pop up for this main page and give me something to type. All right, beautiful. Let me put in a little another message instead of the default one. And when I run it, you can see the breakpoint was hit. This is the breakpoint in my receiving view model, and the parameter is another message. So now the parameter has that default message that came from the constructor. Now it has another message in it. So if I were to run it, you can see it just says another message. That's that title of that page. Let me do it again. So I'll just change it this time. It'll be okay. This will be my last time to do it. They're okay last time. That's because that string is being passed by page one, my main page, being passed to the second page. It's also being passed to the second page view model. That's simple, right? It's just simple navigation. Yep. Forward and back, by the way, are also implemented in template two. One of the things that is in forward and back is just standard navigation of clicking a button, but there are also gestures that make it more accessible. So for example, alt back is a common gesture for forward and backward navigation.
Yep.
Obviously alt right, or I said alt back, but I meant alt left. Alt left is back, alt right is forward. Window backspace is another gesture. This mouse, for example, has a back button built onto it. This keyboard does not, but some keyboards have back buttons built onto them. All of those are built into template 10 and handled for you through all the keystroke kind of listening that is not part of the native framework.
And this thing about making sure you give a good experience to people using keyboard and mouse and using shortcuts, that's kind of maybe something new for developers who up till now may have built apps just only thinking about the touch experience. So a lot of this kind of standard navigation key handling all built into the template 10 services that we incorporate in that. So if it works for you, please make use of it.
So another piece that's important is the ability to go forward and back especially. Of course, on a phone, back is just a natural piece of the phone, right? Because there's always a visible back button. And so you tie into that back button so that your application navigates backwards using the affordance that's right there for the user. But what happens when they go over to the desktop? Well, in Windows 10, we've introduced a shell-drawn back button. And so this is where it is, right? So on the left is when you're in immersive mode. So that's when Continuum is in the touch mode. And when on the right, that's when you're in
windowed
mode, thank you, yes. When you're in the mouse mode for Continuum. And so you can see that there is a back button naturally, automatically drawn by the Windows shell for you. One's in the taskbar, and then when you're in windowed mode, it's up in the title bar. And you as a developer are in charge here. It's not just there.
Yep.
You opt in order to see it.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a debate. We're going to sort of see how this runs with it depends on the app as well as to whether you want to actually draw in your own back navigation controls right on the canvas of your app or whether you want to just leave it to the shell to put it on. Obviously, if you leave it to the shell to draw these things, at least there's going to be that consistency across loads of different apps. But maybe you don't want that in your app.
What would be one of the scenarios where you do want to have an on-canvas back button? Certainly when you're full screen and you can't see the title bar,
yep,
then you need to have your own back button.
Yep. That's right, yeah.
And it's funny, and there's a couple others, too. If your application bleeds into the title bar, that'll hide the title bar, you won't see the back button.
Yeah.
If your there's a lot of these little scenarios, and it's actually a little bit of a trick right now because the current build of Windows doesn't show the shell-drawn back button.
Yeah.
So developers are building applications with on-canvas back buttons, even when the affordance will eventually be provided by the operating system.
Yeah, I mean, if you're watching this, you're probably a Windows insider, because at the moment, at the time we're recording this, you have to be a Windows insider to get Windows 10 until we get to full release. So there will be refreshes, and the shell-drawn back button will turn up at some point. But right at the moment that we're speaking right now, it's not currently in the bits that are being flighted out to you as insiders. So it will be there.
Just because we can't see the back button doesn't mean we don't know how it works, however. So let's talk about some of the functionality. And essentially, this is Windows Phone. The way that Windows Phone works so that the back button is navigating automatically inside your application. Not automatically inside your application.
Automatically
with Windows 10, with template 10 for sure.
Yep.
But if you're just using the blank template, you implement it yourself.
Yeah.
But so it works about the same, right? Until you get to the end of the back stack in your frame, then something different happens.
Yeah, I mean, that line on the bottom of the slide there, the get for current view back requested, is very similar to the hardware back button event that you would have hooked in a Windows Phone 8 application.
That's right.
And the back, as Jerry says, the back button by default, and it's still true in UWP, it actually navigates back from one app to another. So you could be on page three deep in your application, and if you don't actually have any back key handling, if the user does hit back, then they go straight out of your app and onto whatever app they were looking at previously. Now, clearly, that's not the behavior you want in an app. So you need to put in this back key handling, which, as Jerry says, we've done for you in template 10. If you're using another solution, you need to make sure you handle this back navigation.
At least steal the code from template 10, if nothing
else. Please do.
One thing to point out about this back requested event is that it doesn't handle all the scenarios that we just talked about. The back requested event specifically is the hardware back button, as well as the shell drawn back button, and the single keystroke of window plus backspace.
Yeah.
Doesn't handle alt left and right, although that could be added in. I'd love for that to be added in. Also doesn't handle the buttons on your mouse or the buttons on your keyboard as well. So those will all be up to you, the developer, to implement those or just or use template 10.
Back is a pretty complicated concept when you start digging into it.
We haven't even really talked about what it means to navigation. This is just how to hook into it.
Yep.
But once you do, it's there and everything's good to go.
I just wanted to say one point. Well, we've got another session. We're talking about adaptive code, where the Windows Phone hardware back button is still there. If you add the extension SDK, the Windows Mobile extension SDK, you can still hook up the Windows Phone back hardware button. But in most cases in UWP, that wouldn't be the right thing to do anymore because this System Navigation Manager Get for Current View back requested event is a more generalized version that includes the phone hardware back button, but also includes the shell drawn button that you get when you're operating in immersive mode or in windowed mode on desktop.
So briefly, we had talked about the gestures that you want to support. This is that list of gestures, and maybe you will even come up with others. If so, be sure and let Andy and I know. We'd love to know. And then you can opt into windowed mode. That's the whether or not you are immersive. And when it is, that button is automatically put down into the toolbar for you, right? Better to say, if you opt into the button and you're in immersive mode, it shows up in the toolbar automatically. A little bit of guidance. This is just for you to consider. Don't strand your users. Basically, provide a back button. But at the same time, don't fake it with that back button either. That's what we mean by don't hijack the back button, is if you use a secondary tile or some sort of deep linking to go to a deeper page in your application, but you have a home area that you want to navigate back to, don't let the back button go there because the user didn't go through there. So that's not a natural progression to go back. That's hijacking the back button. How do you get to it? You use a home button or something like that. It's your application. You know how to do navigation inside it, but don't make it so that the back button is not reliable or consistent for the user.
I mean, I guess those 2 points really mean just do some usability testing and make sure that people are enjoying using your app, and that's kind of what we're talking about.
Navigation is powerful inside Windows 10. You can pass parameters. You can have this forward and backward navigation with all kinds of affordances. You can even change the shape and layout of your application so that it fits just right in your user's expectations. They are delighted. They love your application. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, and we'll talk about Windows 10 even more.
Even more, we will. See you soon.
See you soon.